And from the Film Grok Studios in beautiful downtown Studio City, this is Film Grok. This week's movie is The Fountain. My name is Serge Dampierre, and we have here...
Michael Smith.
Curtis Nelson.
And...
Heidi Hilliker.
Welcome, everybody. Before we get started, the cue point is the very end of the Regency logo. Not the Warner Brothers logo, but when the Regency logo fades to black, we've paused it. So if you can get to that cue point, that'd be great. And meanwhile, we'll start talking and we're ready to go. I'll count 3, 2, 1, and we will play. We'll hit play and we'll all be in this together. So who wants to talk about The Fountain first? Their viewing experience. We're pointing at Heidi.
Oh, hello.
Hi. Hi, Heidi.
Hi, Serge. I really love this film. I haven't seen it in, I guess, quite some time, probably a year or so, but I really looked forward to it when it was coming out in the theaters. And I have to say, I wasn't disappointed by it at all. I don't know. I love the director. I love Darren Aronofsky, and I love the cast. And I love just the underlying story of love and mourning and moving on that's captured brilliantly, I think.
I have to agree. When I was coming up with a list of movies to do for Film Grok, this was like one of the top ones, because when I saw it, I didn't have many expectations. I'd heard about it. Brad Pitt originally was attached to do it with Cate Blanchett. He bailed out.
I remember
then,
that.
Then it went away for a few years, and then Aronofsky regrouped, and then it came out, and I didn't see it in the theaters. And I was like, what's this? Got it on DVD. And I'm like, wow. I mean, it really touched me deeply. And then actually I found out that it was shot in and around Montreal, so that pleased me very much also, because that's where I'm originally from. So, Michael?
Let's see. When I saw this in the theater when it came out, and I had read a few mixed reviews about it, so I didn't really have a whole lot of expectations on it. But yeah, when I saw it, I just thought it was amazing. And I think for me, it sort of coincided with a time that I was reading a lot of Joseph Campbell, and the symbolism in the movie really connects with Joseph Campbell a lot, and all that sort of stuck with me as well, and just a really amazing film in a lot of ways.
Curtis?
I've seen it one time. Saw it on DVD. I wanted to catch it in the theaters, and same as you, Serge, I had heard that Brad Pitt was attached and all that good stuff, but so I wanted to see it because I love Aronofsky and a good director, and I enjoyed the film. I enjoyed the directing thoroughly. It didn't touch me deeply, but I just the same way Mike just pointed out, really liked it for the symbolism of the Joseph Campbell mythology and stuff like that as well. So enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah. I mean, it's a film I think, well, I mean, you know, it in a way it is a bit of a niche film, but I think it definitely found its audience on DVD afterwards. And I know they kind of rushed it out because there was a great documentary on the DVD that you can watch.
But I've never watched it.
Oh, yeah. It's really, really cool. Yeah, it's like an hour long. And that's how I found out it was shot in Montreal.
Oh, I'll have to check that out sometime.
Yeah, but Aronofsky didn't do a commentary. And I know he made some comments. I don't know if I read about it or it was on the documentary that he said he wanted to do it later. And actually, Aronofsky has a commentary that is out there as a free MP3 that you can get and listen to. I did listen to it. I was like, well, okay, all right. I mean, it kind of expanded the experience for me. I didn't listen to it with the movie, but it was, you know, sort of like, you know, I do with these things. I just listen to them while I'm doing something else.
Yeah. Podcast, I'll have to check that out. I'll have to see if I can find that MP3.
You all can check that out there. Actually, you can find them on and all sorts of commentaries. Zarban, I'm going to give you a shout out on Zarban.com, and that's where I found it originally. And actually, Film Grok is now listed at Zarban, so thank you, Zarban. Okay, so let's get ready to go now, and I'll count 3, 2, 1, play, and we'll go. So 3, 2, 1, play.
Notice how movies use the same scripture in movies over and over.
It is very nice handwriting. This is a beautiful opening. It's all visual. The cinematography is by Matthew Libatique, who's done all of Aronofsky's stuff. And as usual, I mean, he did a great job on Requiem for a Dream, but here he just outdid himself.
I just remember in this opening sequence, what, like we said, Brad Pitt was originally attached to this film, and I thought it was funny that it was his first crazy beard phase where he grew this massively giant beard, and this is back when he was still with Jennifer Aniston. Mm-hmm. And the wig work in this is so good, and so are the facial hair work. And I'm like, okay, he grew that for this and then shaved it off, yet he backed out of the movie. And this looks fantastic. So,
yeah. Well, he did have to work on a fantastic film called Troy. So,
he had to pass it up.
He had to pass it up.
That's right. I mean, who knows what the reasons were, but
no, I'm pretty sure that was.
That was it.
And they shot it right outside of Cabo, so you know he had to do those things. Yeah, it's great.
Hugh Jackman actually does a great job on this.
He's fantastic, and I think you know I feel with a lot of movies, when a cast falls through, I think that it's fate. I think there's a reason for that.
Oh, something magical does happen. I love that line, actually. They just said, let's finish it, because that's what he says right at the... That's his last line in the film. Let's finish it. I love this. The interesting thing is that with the effects in space, originally they were going to do CGI, but that was too expensive, and Aronofsky had to rethink it. And then what they did is they rethought how to do the space sequences. They did it with the, dropping liquids. It's like cinematography. And dropping liquids and using those shapes. Like sort of like it was done in 2001 for some of the effects shots. And it really gives it a very organic feel to it. And it was much, much cheaper. We found some guys to do it, once again, in the documentary, which is really good. And,
well, that's probably why it looks so unique.
Yeah. I like everything centrally composed, the way, you know, he and Leventique worked on that. I personally like that style.
I have to give a little shout out here, too, to the costuming on this film. It's brilliant, especially in, you know, these past sequences.
Mm-hmm. I like how we have three different heroes, too, on each of the different storylines. There's one who's sort of the classical physical hero in the past. In the present, we have the man of science, the scientist story. And then in the future, he's sort of the spiritual hero. So three very different characters. At the same time, they're all sort of these reincarnations of Adam.
Yeah, three different heroes, but all driven by the same purpose.
Right, and then there's a question, of course, in the narrative of how this is written, of which one is... We know the scientist is real. And this is a story. I mean, in his imagination, it's just as real.
To me, they're all real.
Ooh. Really?
Yeah. With the... I look at the sort of outer space, Adam, whereas Adam was the first man, now he's the last man. My sort of approach to this film is that, Adam's eaten from the tree of knowledge, and the world now has become a place of good and evil, of death, and he's aware of his own mortality. So now he's looking for the tree of life and all these different incarnations.
So you're saying, I mean, even though she wrote this as a story, that this is an incarnation?
I'm sorry, you lost me there.
There's three stories. There's this story, which we find out is actually a story that she,
Rachel Weisz's character,
has been writing. Then there is the scientist, and then there's a story where he's flying through space, where we don't know if that's in his imagination or if that actually happened, that's what I love about the ending, is that we realize, wow, that likely did happen. That's what makes it part of its beauty.
I don't know. I have a completely different perspective, I guess, of this, because I tend to favor the opinion that the true of what's happening is the scientist,
right,
and that these are all ways he's incorporating these stories in order to deal with death.
I agree with that too, and that's the way I saw it till the end. But then there's like the little thing at the end where he plants the little thing for the tree in the snow.
Yeah,
and now we're skipping to the end. I was like, wait a minute. that is wild. I mean, it just gives you the hint that maybe that other storyline, which we haven't gotten to yet, could be real. But I mean, but in terms of the storytelling, and once again, we bring it back to this. It's instrumental in how the story, how to tell this whole story.
Yeah.
Because it tells, in a way, the different, I don't want to say the different parts of his mind. I mean, the different parts of his soul are basically dealing with one thing.
Take the pebble from my hand.
And now we're in space. One thing about Aronofsky is I think he's into meditation.
That would explain a lot of this.
Yeah.
And here we see the tree, which I think is a much more important symbol in the story than the idea of the fountain itself, because it goes back to the Joseph Campbell and the World Tree, the Axis Mundi, and all that sort of stuff.
Did Aronofsky say that he used some of Joseph Campbell's ideas for this, or just it's pretty much laid in there?
I don't know that he had to have even read Joseph Campbell. I mean, if he had a sense of mythology at all, he could have picked up on that sort of thing.
Well, it's interesting, too. I mean, that is the theory of Joseph Campbell, is all of this stuff, the stories told throughout human history kind of overlap onto each top of each other, on top of each other without us really trying anyway, correct?
Absolutely. I mean, you have in the World Tree, you have Buddha who sits beneath the tree and finds enlightenment. Christ on the cross is just a transposed sort of tree. Was it the Norse mythology with Odin sacrificing himself upon the tree that holds up the nine worlds and all that sort of thing? It's goes on and on.
I love the hair on the tree.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just thinking that.
I think there is something later where I think they do a shot, and I hope they do. I don't remember. Where he's right up against Rachel Weisz's skin, and it very much suggests that.
Absolutely, yeah.
I like right here where it's like the stars are always moving in the background. It's almost like he's continually rising.
Mm-hmm. Well, he is. He's moving towards
what is it? The nebula?
I've forgotten the term for it.
Yeah, well, we saw the nebula there.
But it was the Mayan afterlife, right? They bring it up later where they're looking at the stars and she points it out, and mm-hmm. the nebula. And
yeah, and that's where the suggestion is that this is in his mind. I mean, it's never made concrete, and that's a beautiful thing. And right. And there she is, you know, whether this is for real or it is part of his imagination. And in a way, it doesn't make a difference because it's telling the story. And for us as in the film, it's just as important. I like how they have him bald here so that we can pop between the two stories. You mentioned Axis Mundi. What's that a reference to?
The world axis is sort of the, also known as like the world navel. It's basically it's a center point for where any sort of important mythological event might happen. So you have, Christ on the cross, Buddha beneath the tree, all these sorts of things would happen at the world navel. It's one of Joseph Campbell's ideas.
Oh, okay. This is cool. And the interesting thing is that you would think at first that this is just, you know, an effect, but it is actually, it's practical in the sense that it is him doing Tai Chi against a sea of stars with no light on him. And it's interesting in terms of the structure. He starts off with the, you know, the story that she's writing. Then he goes to this internal story, essentially, if not, you know, futuristic. And then they're only going to go to what we'll, quote unquote, call reality later.
Yeah, again, to me, they're all reality. I think the story, her writing the story and everything is just a device to get, you know, from one to the other. Again, the way I look at it, it's, you know, I mean, we begin with the note about Adam being kicked out of the Garden of Eden. To me, they're all reincarnations of Adam in various aspects. And here, again, I see this as where Adam was the first man, now he's the last man at the end of the universe.
So you're saying they're all, oh, wow, look at that. I forgot about that.
I love that too, like the rings of the tree.
Absolutely.
It's brilliant.
Wow. That he's just, this is Adam reincarnated over and over and over.
Yes, in a certain regard, yes.
Well, I mean, in a literal kind of Eastern spiritualistic way, or in a more of a literary symbolic way?
Literary symbolic way.
Okay, all right. So they're similar stories, but not literally. Adam is being reincarnated.
But I guess you could take it either way.
That's how I took it when I first saw it. I actually thought it was just, you know, just the same character, just reincarnate through these different historical times.
Well, it's an interesting thought that maybe, you know, that in a way... If Adam is the first man, that means, you know, essentially we are all, there's all a part of Adam symbolically within us that we have to discover.
Well, it's, I mean, to me, though, this, each story is Adam. He, again, when he ate from the tree of knowledge, he became aware of good and evil and his own mortality and away from his understanding of God. And so, it's all about him moving back towards that understanding of the world and the universe before he ate from the tree of knowledge.
But he's eating from the tree of, I mean, and I'm going
to... His goal is to eat from the tree of life, right?
Right. Well, actually, here I'm going to take it one step further, because this is all driven by his pursuit of her love. I mean, he has her love, but essentially trying to retain that. It's all about her love and trying to keep it and retain it.
And her life. Yeah. Not so much his own.
Right, exactly.
Exactly.
And that's, in other words, he sacrifices everything. He eats from the tree, I mean, to keep that love. Because once she's gone, she is gone.
I love the lab. Sorry.
No, that's okay. No, I was just going to comment on the fact that sometimes I just wonder, you know, studios don't know how to market movies like this because of what we're talking about right now. Everybody kind of derives their own really ideas of what's going on in the film. And then if that's the case, how do they promote or market something to a larger audience? But I enjoy it for that reason too, because Mike's opinion isn't wrong. Serge's isn't wrong. As long as your opinion is, or mine or yours, we see it in different ways. But that's the point, I think, when making that.
But that's what makes this film so good, is that, I mean, even on that level, where the stories mean, we can even start looking at different things and how we can draw different things.
I think, you know, this is really ahead of its time, because I feel like
absolutely.
Inception is very similar. And look how good it's doing, you know, in the box office right now. And I think it's kind of, I would almost put them in the same genre of a film.
Just one has more explosions and...
Right. But as far as being, you know...
And Tom Hardy.
Yeah.
Well, as far as like being at the core, you know, about a relationship and about loss and also being open to interpretation and existing in a fantasy world, I think they're very similar. I just think that I think The Fountain was definitely ahead of its time. I don't think that it had the studio backing that Inception has. It could have been that kind of film.
It doesn't have guns. It doesn't have, you know, the kind of action that Inception does. Oh, wow.
It seems like this, too, where I really do think that I would like to see Hugh Jackman do more films like this and The Prestige and things like that, where he really gets to stretch his legs, and you don't get to see a lot from him. And so he's, for that reason, he's not put in the ballpark of a Duvall or a De Niro and those great actors. And, you know, he really is. He's just done a few comic book movies. That's the only difference.
I like how they just did this, how they basically showed inspiration.
Right.
And it's all in a way, it's in the context of how he's already set up in these 15 minutes how to tell the film. And just had him look up, and he saw essentially was the space effects that we've been seeing so far, but putting it into this environment. And then we have this overhead shot. That's great.
I like how this storyline explores a classic science fiction theme of really the limitations of science and how far science can take you and how well it ties in with the idea of him looking for this understanding that's beyond science. I mean, you see that again, like in, you know, Star Wars and The Force and,
right.
And The Matrix and all the great science fiction films that is a running theme, even going back to Frankenstein.
But once again, he's driven by Izzy, by his wife, and curing her cancer. That's what this whole thing is about. And he's finding his inspiration. That's truly what's driving him.
Right, but the understanding that he comes to in the end is beyond the science that he's...
Well, the science is a tool. The science is all about, retaining his, living in love with Izzy. It's interesting. I'm just going to go to Inception really quickly. I saw Inception. I thought it was really cool, but I came away feeling nothing. And that's just me. I don't know what happened. I was watching, and I'm like, but I felt nothing in terms of that. And then this, for some reason, the way I am, I just really felt a lot from it.
Well, I think it's much more in tune for that. I think it's a much more passionate feeling film.
Yeah.
You know? And I, even though I do feel like they tell a very similar story.
Ellen Burstyn, she's awesome.
Truth.
She is a gilf.
She might be a G-gilf by now.
She's one of those women that just really retained her she wasn't so striking when she was younger, but for whatever reason, as she got older, I really find her striking. Really pretty. Running around killing baboons, we can't have it.
And there you have it. He's there for her.
Which is so sad because he really should just be spending time with her.
Yeah, but he wants to save her. It was interesting actually with The Office, the way they built the set is they actually have it set below the street and you can see people walking on the sidewalk there.
I wonder if there was a CG bird.
I didn't really notice.
I love this house. Again, I just feel like the art direction in this entire film is so beautiful.
Well, it's so tied into everything that's going on.
Uh-huh.
You know.
What a great shot to come in through that window like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's, starting outside, coming back
that's
in.
That's a very long technocrane shot. Either that or they took part of the wall out. She's bad. There we go. It's a nebula wrapped around a dying star.
There we go.
There you go. Oh. Which is symbolic in and of itself.
Yep.
It's interesting. It takes a story about a man who is unable to deal with the fact that his wife is dying and makes it interesting.
Because we've seen this story a million times.
And it's just, how do you tell it? And you found a way to tell it in a very compelling way.
Well, and it's something I think everybody can relate to, because it's one of the basic stories, you know.
But it's not easy to tell.
That's no, it's not easy to tell because it has been told so many times. But, you know, loss and grief and moving on, it's hard to capture that in an authentic way. And it's funny that fantasy actually somehow captures it best.
Mm-hmm. Well, because fantasy gives us a chance to step out of the normal reality and to explore it. That's interesting. The stars are basically in a triangle with the nebula at the center.
It's interesting. He's so worried about her, he really didn't even really hear.
The music, I think, is performed by the Kronos Quartet. And this is practically wall-to-wall music. But it's still, you don't notice it. It's still beautiful. Look at that. That's all chemical effects.
Wow.
It's gorgeous.
It works fantastic.
Should have dropped that hit of acid before I came over.
Dude.
There he is, the Omega Man.
Yeah, he is.
And it's not Charlton Heston.
And it's not Will Smith or Vincent Price.
You can't run a 3-minute mile?
Is that what Charlton Heston does?
It's one of the greatest lines in Omega Man. He like, you know,
that was a beautiful transition.
He comes kind of trotting up and he's like, looks at his own watch. 3.5-minute mile. He starts monologuing himself. I'm like, oh, you'd be a little bit more high breath.
Let me say for the record, Rachel Weisz is really beautiful. And she's a really great actress, too.
Fantastic.
Yeah. She won for the Oscar for...
Constance Gardner.
Yeah. Thank you. Which I thought she did a better job here. She did a good job there, but this, you know, this was really outstanding.
That's a lot of times the case with actors, you know, receiving awards.
Happens a lot.
Yeah. It's interesting the way they're playing, it's all visual, communicating that she can't detect changes in heat, whether mm-hmm. it's cold or scalding hot.
Well, and it's really a sophisticated storytelling method. You know, most movies would just spoon feed it to you. Again, maybe why this movie didn't make a lot of money, or they didn't know how to market it, because the general viewing audience isn't really receptive to this kind of storytelling.
Yeah.
Don't say that. Some studio head will hear that, and then we'll get more lines actually coming from dialogue that explains the story.
It happens all the time, and it will keep on happening. It'll always happen.
Yeah.
And it's interesting the way they take the time to really, you know, let her character explore how she's feeling different, even as she knows that she's dying. Slowly but surely.
What's her actual disease again?
Some sort of cancer.
Yeah, it's cancer.
And the interesting thing is he has such a hard time letting go into what her feelings are.
Well, again, he's the man of science. He's trying to reason his way through everything, and it's just something he can't reason his way through.
He's right. Detached from his emotions.
Yeah, he has to detach himself because he can't bear the pain.
And two, how do you really relate to someone who is dying? Someone who has, like she says, she feels different inside. She's going on her own unique individual journey right now. And even though she's reaching out to him, how can you really understand that when you're the one who's still alive? You're the one who's going to survive.
Right. And then also just the whole thing of the knowledge of death in a way, you know, if he knows how it feels, in a way it gets too close to death. And
if
you're not dying, do you really want to know that?
Well, and it, being that he's a man of science and knows everything about what her actual cause of death is going to be, he knows the realism. The fact is that she's probably not going to live. And how do you have to detach. You have to separate yourself.
But he wants to insist that he can solve it. He can break this. He can figure this out.
He wants that, and he strives for that, and that's his motivation, yet he knows he most likely won't.
Right.
And it's the dealing with that frustration.
Great shot.
Nice.
Which we'll see again later on.
And again.
That's Montreal.
Later on.
That's Montreal skyline.
That poor little monkey.
I know.
As miraculous as it is, he can't accept the fact that it wasn't the one he was looking for.
Right.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Nobel Peace Prize. Come on. Finish the drink.
So basically they stopped the growth of the tumor, but he wants to reverse it, right?
Yeah.
Did they say that they stopped it, or it was there's just no change?
They said there was no change.
Still could be going.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know if that means they feel like what they did stopped it, but that there is no change in the tumor.
What I was getting at, though, I think the point is that there's no change in her condition or the condition that would be hers, and it's still going to grow as it always has, is what I took out of it.
Right.
Yeah.
There we go.
There's the shot.
There's the hair. That's right. That's the nape of her neck.
Which really ties her to the tree, and we'll see more of that.
Right, because, yeah. Yeah, because he basically plants the bark right on top of her grave.
It's just heartbreaking. It's almost even difficult to talk while watching this.
No, I had a good friend who his girlfriend passed away through breast cancer, and it is the same things you're seeing here. He's like, he confided in me, and it's just so daunting on your soul. But then also what builds a great character for Hugh Jackman to work off of is now how do you, a man of science, feel that you could possibly correct it or stop it or change it with, you have the skill set to possibly change this, but yet you can't do anything about it.
Right. Because, I mean, in a way, unfortunately, that's life.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And death comes to us all.
Right. And you're fighting nature is what it is.
He wants to fix death.
He wants to beat death. He wants to beat nature.
I love the idea of this, of her writing this book to help him move on, to help him deal with this. And I think, you know, it's very, I think that when she get, and you can see it in all over her face when she hands him that book, it's almost, she knows she's on the end. It's time to start reading the book. It's time to start getting prepared for, for her not to be around.
Right. I like how she asked him to finish the book too.
Yeah.
Right. Which is the last line of the film. Let's finish it. Which it has triple, three meanings. Stephen McCaddy, Canadian. Great actor.
Played a great bad guy in Geronimo.
Oh, wow. No one expects the Spanish Inquisition.
Hey, where'd that blood come from? Oh, wait, never mind.
You know, it's just that bowl of blood.
Yeah. Well, man, you know, we have to whip ourselves for certain reasons.
Yeah.
Paints are hard to come by at that time.
It's interesting that basically the third story, you know, he went with the Spanish Inquisition. Well, essentially searched for the New World.
I can never hear those words without thinking of Mel Brooks.
Well, that's the thing.
The Inquisition.
But then I guess that's what, you know, the metaphor is, that he's looking for that. She's helping him find the new world.
The new world.
Without her. The meaning of life.
Well, she's helping him find the new world. He thinks he's going to find, you know, immortality.
Right.
Right. But I meant the new world is a metaphor.
I agree with that. I agree with both of them as a metaphor. She's trying to send him to the new world. He's trying to find immortality. They move in the same direction. He's going to the same place, right, on the same journey, but they both want different results from it.
In this story, he's just trying to serve the queen, right? I don't remember.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's doing it for her.
Yeah.
To protect her crown.
Nice. Same shot as with the one on the street.
I love the trailer for this movie when it first came out, because they showed those three shots like right in a row together.
Oh.
Fantastic.
And actually what's really good is that, you know, historical films can be good, but they can be overlong. This historical film, the 1/3, is just the right length. It does what it has to do.
But again, it's completely fantasyful version of this historic event.
Oh, well, yeah. It's interesting how he's talking about the body as being so temporary or ephemeral, which relates, of course, to
everything.
Yeah,
film.
Look at the Black Hoods. Oh my God, look at that!
Good DP work right there, having to light all those guys' faces underneath them.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
Oh yeah.
Wonder how much those guys got paid.
Yeah, really. Let's see. That's more than just. I think they had to have a few bumps there for their work there. I think that was probably stunt work.
Stunt work for sure.
Stunt work, at least double pay. You're going to be hanging upside down for a few hours, for like 3 hours.
And we're going to shake you.
Do it.
I love how in this storyline the hero is so physical, and the understanding that he comes to in the end is actually an actual physical transformation.
I love that transition of just like the audio of galloping.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful. They use so many candles in this film, and again, like this almost looks like space, stars. Like the stars. And then in their home, they have all the candles lit,
and all the candles were hanging at different levels, exactly to give that feeling of the stars. It's great that this story that he's built is just so clearly symbolic and a metaphor for what's happening in her life.
Yep.
You know, Spain is being consumed by darkness.
And I love that we're following him, but this is really her perspective of it because she wrote it.
Right.
And I don't know if you've noticed this, but like on the detailing on her dress is that of a tree's roots. It's really beautiful.
And that's leaves and flowers on the little doors in front of her.
Yeah.
Nice.
Tying her to the tree.
Also like that here she's veiled. I mean, I guess veiled. They're shooting through the lattice, so we don't see her clearly.
You guys were thinking all this, and I thought Hugh Jackman would make a great Robin of Locksley.
I think there's still some time for him to do that, but I think Russell Crowe just kind of courted that market for the next few years.
But it'll always come back around.
Well, that guy. I don't know his name, but he's a good actor. He's been in lots of things.
He was best in Pet Detective. Played
this guy?
The landlord for Ace Ventura. Oh.
Great.
Well, I'm sure he feels he's taken an artistic step up here.
Yeah.
Of course, yeah.
You know, I find it interesting that this actually, what they're hooking part of this on to tell the story is the search for the Fountain of Life, which is, you know, of course, a legend and really interesting. And I kind of get a kick out of reading stories, you know, every once in a while, science stories of how they've figured out this or that about cell regeneration or this can extend life. And I'm like, I think immortality is a great idea and everything, but if everyone became immortal, I mean, like, how are we all going to survive? You know, really, what, are few people going to be immortal? Is that what the deal is? I mean, is that what we want to...
But I think the whole point of this film, just in general, is that immortality isn't necessarily a gift.
Precisely.
Oh, yeah.
I used to, where they first, the Spaniards did go to look for the Fountain of Youth is in St. Augustine, Florida. It's actually the oldest colony in the United States. And I used to live pretty near there. It's really fun to go. There's a beautiful big Spanish fort, and they do have a location where they assumed the original, or the Fountain of Youth was. There's a fountain there. I've drank from it. If I pass away, we'll know it doesn't work.
Have you aged since then?
I think so. Yes, oh. I'm pretty sure.
Oh, well, okay.
But it's a beautiful city.
Right.
I guess if there was the center of life, I would think it was there.
I love how they
this
also
is kind of
trans-
important right here.
Oh, go ahead.
Just what
that's interesting.
This just provides the basis for all the storylines here is the search for the tree of life.
That apparently God hid from Adam and Eve.
Well, because if we all ate from the tree of life, then we would be like God himself.
Well, actually, and please someone correct me because I'm not, you know, so up on my Bible, but isn't there a tree of knowledge and a tree of life, and aren't they separate?
That's exactly what you're saying.
Yeah, okay, that's exactly what she was just saying.
Okay, all right, I missed that part, but yeah, okay. Because I always thought for some reason, oh, there's one tree, but no, there's two trees.
No, there's two trees.
But I like the idea, you know, especially you see this in the future incarnation of the story, is that she's related to the tree of knowledge. She's not really related to the tree of life. That's something outside of them.
Hmm.
You know, he eats from her in order to survive and to keep on going on this journey. And that, you know, the symbolism that the relationship between two people is like eating from the tree of knowledge, like living your life and experiencing a connection with another human being is where you get the knowledge.
That's great how they lit her here so brightly. I like that Aronofsky is not scared of using overhead shots, and he's used it a few times, and he's used it well. And that looks like his actual wedding ring. Wow.
If that's not motivation.
Yep.
A great example of the idea of the tree, as I was reviewing some Joseph Campbell, is the Christmas tree we all erect every year is essentially the tree of life. It's put up at the winter solstice for the return of the sun.
Is it tree of life or tree of knowledge? It's tree of life, right?
Well, it would be that's a little specific. I mean, if you want to just sort of refer to it as the world tree, the idea of the tree as a microcosmic symbol for the rest of the universe.
Okay. This scene, actually, this is really cool, what happens in this scene. With the pool of light, I thought that was amazing.
What I was going to say earlier is notice how he uses gold throughout the whole movie to represent that star she was talking about at the beginning,
mm-hmm.
through the telescope. And it just, every scene, It's gorgeous.
Oh, well, that's right. That's what she writes in the, with the story.
So this is the Mayan Adam she's talking about?
Okay. Shabalba. That's right. She's like, I'm trying to get you to understand that I'm dying. And he's like, nope, you're not dying.
And she's also trying to comfort him and say that, yeah, that death isn't the end.
Right. And here it is. This is beautiful. He has her step into the pool of light, and he slows it down, slow-mo.
Basically, what she just said to him is the understanding that each of his these characters has to come to.
Right.
That death is creation.
Right.
That that had the understanding of that paradox.
I thought that was, I mean, for me, that was like one of the most beautiful shots of the film. I mean,
it's a great shot.
It's heartbreaking where she just, you know, she collapses in that pool of light in slow motion, but it's just, you know, she looks up, she sees a light in a way.
I like the last shot where it just looked like somebody's eyeball.
Yeah, it does. It looks like an iris.
Yeah. Okay, that's what it was. She had a seizure. Yeah, the whole thing of, you know, using the pool of light in ways is very, I mean, like a theatrical interpretation of what was happening inside of her.
Another thing Campbell talks about a lot, too, is in the language of mythology that man typically sets himself apart from nature and is working towards something, working against it or for it or however, and then that women are often reflective of nature itself. I think you see that a lot in her character, and that in the cycle of life and death, she is that, and he has to come to understand that.
Yeah. Well, and she's completely embraced that. And is trying desperately to communicate that to him.
Exactly. And he's just not ready to hear it.
No.
But that is an interesting, you know, thing about humanity is why are we always battling against nature? Why do we always need to have some sort of understanding, whether it's through myth or magic or science? Why can't we just embrace the unknown or give in to the cycle of life? We're always trying to change it.
I think that's more our culture.
I don't know, though. I mean, I would say that that goes back to man at the beginning of time. Just even in the myth of Adam and Eve, you know, trying to fight against nature, trying to change it, trying to take control, take something that you shouldn't have. Knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Great shot.
So basically, whatever the compound is it's making Donovan immortal, but it's not curing the cancer, which is interesting.
Because you can't fight death. You can't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even if you I mean, obviously that's the best. Storytelling method right there. Even if you've made a discovery, even if you have the ability to be immortal, that doesn't mean it's going to cure you of your diseases. It doesn't mean it's going to solve your problems.
Saw an interesting expose on, it was either 2020 or 60 Minutes. I always get too confused, but they were talking to a director of a hospital, and he's the one that's in charge of giving people advice on their loved ones as they die. You know, like, you know, listen, they are dying. They are going to die. Do you want to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars to keep them alive for 2, 3, 4, 5 more months, sometimes even years? But do you want to break the bank in order to die? Or in order to save them from dying. And he said that it was always the dying ones that were realistic about the death. And they were like, okay, just let me die. It was the family members and the loved ones that could never let them pass on. And they were the ones that would always fight until the very end and waste their life savings and even beyond to keep them alive for sometimes just a few days.
A significant portion of healthcare costs go to trying to save people who are in essentially in their last days, mm-hmm. in their last month. Mm-hmm. You know, we as a people do not know how to die.
Mm-hmm.
Or how to let others die.
And that's mostly what it is. It's because we have to keep on living, and unfortunately, they're the ones who are going away, and we are still the ones staying, and so how do you even deal with that? I mean, that there's a whole complex of stuff, but that's even just where it starts.
Well, it's interesting, too. I mean, I'm sure everybody here has probably dealt with death in their own lives, as far as like people they know. And in my cases, in the cases of my past, it was like the people that eventually died through this long, tragic death that was just slow and takes forever. The weight lifted off the living was amazing, that it just, if they were able to regenerate their own lives. And that's the thing about people that are dying. They don't want you to suffer. And so they would rather pass on in order to let you live. And it's pretty interesting in that you see that here.
Yeah.
There's a cross there.
Yeah, that's interesting, focusing on the patterns in the elevator. Once again, great use of light, just having the overhead lights to, I mean, it's great.
Stars again.
Great cinematically, but also stars, inspiration, thinking, revelation.
Again, lots of crosses, and the cross comes back to the tree.
See, even in those small little instances right that when people compliment her and say how great she is, well, he knows all those things, but he doesn't want to hear it.
Yep.
Even that small little gesture of him turning to her and saying, no,
yeah.
No, I know she is amazing, but I can't accept that. It makes it even that harder, that much harder.
I wonder if the room being 620 has anything to do with
some biblical
anything.
Term,
yeah. Yeah.
Well, if you remember from Pi, Aronofsky really got into numerology and esoteric Judaic numerology and that sort of thing. So I wouldn't be surprised if it had something to do with that.
You know, I kind of prefer this with Hugh Jackman as opposed to Brad Pitt.
Me too. Oh my gosh, me too. I think I honestly think he's a much more talented actor.
I think Brad Pitt's good for some parts, and I think, you know, Hugh Jackman's good for others.
And Cate Blanchett would have been interesting in the other role.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely, yeah.
But I just don't think it would have been right. I don't think it would have.
No, it works this way.
Yep.
Makes you wonder what made him turn away from it, because it'd be interesting. I would be interested to see how well he could pull it off. Not that he could. But I'd be interested to see.
I do really think it was from that movie, Troy. I think he was committed. I'm not even joking. I think he was committed to filming that, and he was committed to filming this. And then the fountain got pushed back,
right.
And then he had to go film Troy, and then he was already committed to Troy, so once that, you know, it was just scheduling conflicts.
Right. It was also a passion project, I thought, for him, was the fountain. I mean, he stuck by it for a long, long time.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. And maybe it just took a long time for it to get off the ground. And finally he said, I got to step away to do other things. So, but it all works out for the best in the end.
It really does, too, because, you know, I love Cate Blanchett. I love her. I think she's extremely talented. You know, I think Brad Pitt has talent as well. But they don't even look Spanish. If we're just going to go visually, I think that I think visually this coupling makes a lot more sense in believing that she was Queen Isabella and he was a conquistador.
I'll buy that.
But I think of the way that Aronofsky tells the story, they don't need to be.
No, you know,
They're basically just symbols for those characters anyhow.
Yeah.
Right.
One of the things I really love about this film is it sort of reflects one of my own personal beliefs in that science in a lot of ways has become like a religion in our culture. Mm-hmm. And it hasn't done a successful job of replacing religion and mythology that have been so important to our society for so long. And here you see this character who clings to science as his religion, and here she is trying to give him the mythology he needs to experience this as he needs to.
Well, he's basically trying to use science to do what cannot be done, which is beat death.
Right.
This is about as hard a challenge as he can have.
I think the reason people will always, no matter how scientific our society does become, people will always need to have something spiritual, something that they use to explain the things that science can't explain.
Exactly. Science deals with the conceptual world. And that's, I think, one of the major notes in this movie is that, you know, the conceptual only gets you so far, that there is a point of understanding that goes beyond the conceptual. I mean, that is maybe getting a little too much into Eastern Buddhist philosophy, but you know, there are limitations to conceptual thought, and that's what mythology does such a great job of, is leading you to an understanding of those places beyond conceptual thought.
Not taking away from everything was just said very brilliantly, by the way, Michael. Mm. But that scene was great, and especially that single shot on her, where she brought those tears on camera right in front of him. Mm-hmm. Great, great acting.
And here we go to this shot. I love these shots.
Yeah.
Here we go to the cosmic man, the last
Notice
man.
How that forms a tree in the back there.
I had noticed that before. That's quite nice. Which goes towards the tree as the microcosmic symbol of the universe as a whole, of the macrocosm. So that's quite fitting.
Very well said.
Boy came to play.
Yep.
Well, here we see him trying to essentially, by saving the tree, save the universe, save everything, but everything goes, including the universe. So, mm-hmm.
the
galaxy, or, you know,
with the star, because I think Shabalba is the dying star,
right? But it's more of an overall universal end to things here in the storyline.
Well, and it's what she was talking about before. It's a new beginning,
and a new beginning.
This will just end what we know as life as humans.
That's what he has to come to understand. Yeah. Death is creation.
Right.
That's such an important note in this thing.
He does a great job of close-ups in this movie.
Yeah. And the interesting thing is that, you know, for him to... for him to help her, I guess, what is it? He essentially becomes immortal to help her live, in a way.
and this film was pretty much all night shoots, it looks like, and they never really showed day.
Well, technically that's day.
But they don't, you know, I mean, they don't show it. They don't reveal it to us.
Yeah.
Even the museum scene.
It's not a lot of day exteriors.
Yeah, they just show everything.
Actually, I'm not sure if there are any day.
Yes, there are.
Oh, towards the end. Yes.
Yeah, the very end. Yeah. And there's not a lot of exteriors in this period.
But isn't that after she's already passed on, yeah?
Yeah.
So
I think it's for the funeral.
So now he's going to read the mythology that she's given him.
And there's the same stars that she showed him before.
Yeah, welcome to Florida. It rains all the time.
Yeah.
Well, they're in Florida or in Mexico here? Where?
Because
if they're the temple, I guess.
The Spaniards were in Florida.
Yeah, they settled Florida.
Right,
that's where they did go. I mean, initially, that is where they saw.
They also ended up in Mexico, though. The Cortez ended up in Mexico. I mean, that's where the
Mayan
pyramids and that sort of thing. Right? That guy.
I know. I was thinking, what have I seen? I've seen him.
Was it the Australian film Once Were Warriors? Is that the one he was in also?
Oh, Timur Morrison? The guy who played
Jango Fett? Yeah.
No, that's not Jango Fett.
No, that's not him. He's in that, though. He plays the drunk.
Okay, yeah, I think he is Australian. Well, yeah.
No, he's from New Zealand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry.
He actually may have appeared on Xena or Hercules. Usually that's how I can identify an actor as being a Kiwi or an Aussie, you know, if they had a small one episode.
Do you play like a centaur?
Probably. Actually, he might really have.
Everyone wound up on Xena and Hercules down there.
Yeah.
He did a great job in Training Day. He actually played a Mexican drug guy. He's one of the guys that held Ethan Hawke in the bathtub and was going to shoot him with a shotgun.
Totally forgot that. That's right.
No. He's a good actor is what I'm trying to say.
Oh, yeah.
This character is such a nice contrast from the other two because he's so physical and the others are not. That it gives it a little bit more energy and balance to it with him being so physical.
Well, it's three sides of the same man. You know, one is physical, one is mental, and one is spiritual.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. It was a nice... I didn't quite see that. That took me kind of a second screening to kind of... see the balance and all that.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter which side of a man you are, you all experience the same journey. It's brilliant.
And that's what's great about this film is it basically breaks it up into three stories. You can tell all about the story of the one man.
for not having fast reflexes like me. Guy, you were looking right at the guy. How did you get hit?
Yeah. That's a locket of her hair, right?
Looks as so.
It looks like it.
Inside, what it almost looks like an exploding star with a tree cross on top of it.
And this is exactly from the beginning, which is where we started. At the very beginning. I can't see Brad Pitt having done this.
I can't either. I really just can't.
He's such a different type of actor.
Yep.
It would have been a different film.
Yeah, it would have been a completely different film. Your doctor.
They're taking an awful long time getting in there. Okay, here we go.
It's a really nice hospital room.
It is.
I've never been in a hospital room that nice.
Just noticed some gold cross drawers down on the bottom there.
What?
Yeah.
But again, brilliant acting. He processed all of that, and you saw it happen.
Right. Leave. Buddy, that's his wife.
For a moment there, he's the conquistador.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
That must have been an awesome day for Rachel Weisz.
Not as good as the bathtub scene.
Oh, no. I'm saying this in a negative way. Today, you're going to lay in a bed, and Hugh Jackman's just going to, like, drool on your face.
Right. Here goes the tree universe.
Now, see, this is where the suggestion is that the story is actually in his mind. Or it actually happens, and at this point also,
but this is
the tree petrifies.
Yeah, I feel like this is his soul. This is his soul dealing with it.
I feel like the mental reality of the storylines doesn't really make a difference to me. Just watch them for their
storylines
and as aspects of the same character.
Right. It could be one. It could be the other. I'm not saying it's definitely one. I'm just it's so interesting that it could be one and it could at the same time be the other one too.
Here we go. Day exterior.
There you go.
But
that's out in the either Eastern Townships or in Laurentians. Montreal winters.
That's why I live in California.
It was fine as a child.
Can't even accept the ritual.
Can't even deal with it, yeah.
Gosh, it's so shitty of him to do this, too.
Selfish, because it's a ritual not just for him, but for everyone else.
For everyone else.
You know, he doesn't usually play dark roles. I mean, I guess Wolverine could be considered dark, but this one's pretty damn dark.
I don't know if I'd categorize it as dark, as passionate, soulful, many other things. But I mean, he's driven so hard through those emotions.
Mm-hmm.
But he hasn't given up.
Right. She's dead, and he still hasn't given up.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Don't ever let me give myself a tattoo with a with a pen, please.
Which, of course, ties into what we see in the outer space, into the space timeline. Wow, look at that. That is amazing.
What it is, it's the beginning of trying to move towards understanding by making the rings of himself, of the tree. He's trying to become like the tree, moving towards that understanding that the tree universe there has for him. There's a very touch of Buddhism here in the idea of the ego as a, you know, being man's understanding of being separate from the world and something separate, and that the understanding of these other characters is all moving towards understanding that they're not separate from the rest of the universe. They're just a part of it.
Right. Well, I mean, that's, you know, in a way, that's my thing with, I mean, modern civilization is that, in a way, we've moved away from that connection.
Exactly.
And, I mean, essentially, and I don't want to get a whole thing about materialism, but at its essence, being attached to material stuff moves you away from that connection. I mean, there's trade-offs, too. I mean, there are definitely some positives, but...
There's a great Buddhist sutra that has a whole list of things that goes on about no mind, no tongue, just on and on, negations, no, to emphasize the fact that, you know, we're not separate from everything, that everything is one.
Right.
God, that lab is so awesome. I love how it's just like, nestled in what, like a half of a mountain or something?
Well, no, but that's actually what I was going to say, is actually it looks like it's set on just slightly underground.
Yeah.
And that's rock outside the windows, and it's like about half a story beneath the street.
But one rarely builds
this is important,
a lab in a boulder. Giant boulder.
You hear him talking about stop aging, stop dying.
Yeah.
Right.
Still clinging to the idea of being that to be human is to be something apart from nature that can be overcome. And they leave him in the dark.
Yeah. Huh. And oh, that's interesting.
Here, even as the Omega Man, he's about to explode, and he's clinging to the idea.
Wow, that's beautiful.
Yeah, so well done.
Those clouds.
There he admits it. I'm afraid. He speaks his fear of mortality right there. His own mortality.
And then like all the stories are just clashing. She's there, and he sees her as the queen.
Again, all these different incarnations of each character.
Well, you know, the idea that maybe he's, you know, I mean, once again, this is all projection. She's not really there. This is what his mind is seeing.
Or this is in the story. He's now Adam and Eve.
Exactly. It's a story in his mind. Huh. I love how she changes her voice for those different roles.
Yeah.
There it is. I love how they build up to that moment and give it so much weight, because it's one thing to say that you know you're going to die, and it's a whole nother thing to really know that you're going to die.
To really realize that.
Yeah, it's... Mm-hmm. it's.
Well, especially in the context of the story here, the fact that he's in this story, whether it's real or whether it's in his imagination, that he's lived for these thousands of years to travel to Shabulba.
Only to come to the understanding that she was trying to express to him from the beginning.
Death is creation.
Right. They're replaying this scene again. In fact, they've played it two or three times now.
Because it's the one great regret.
Yeah.
It's the choice to try to reach for life or to live it.
It's one of those films where each viewing, I like the film more and more.
Yeah. Look at that. I like how the sphere is rotating. You just see part of the tree.
Sitting in the full lotus.
Mm-hmm.
Which is in Buddhist terms is an expression of no ego.
And that's the third eye right there.
Mm-hmm.
First father.
And he just said Shibalba. Well, Shibalba.
Yeah. Death is the road to all.
That's such a great line.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Brilliant.
Here he sees the conquistador and as what he calls first father, and it's in the form of our Omega Man.
In the lotus position. So basically now the story essentially hasn't finished, so he's playing it out in his mind. This is how he plays it out.
You see, they forgive me, first father.
Yeah.
He sees him as the Mayan Adam.
Yeah. And he's like, all right, fine, I'll do it.
What I love about this is here we've had this character that's been so physical. Okay, so his understanding that he comes to is physical. His understanding that he's not apart from the rest of the universe, he finds out by becoming part of the world tree.
Yeah. But he's just, at this point, he's just seeking knowledge. Oh, there's the hair also, of course.
He's looking for immortality, and he gets it, but right. Not in the way he thought.
No. Well, he's dead now, the conquistador. He's dead.
Huh.
Not, he was killed.
No, he was
dead.
And
that's why he's now crossing over.
Yeah.
Ooh.
That's the life that they're talking about.
And it's the parallel to the future, the Omega Man, you know, saying, I will die.
Oh, I just took it that he was stabbed, but that he wasn't killed.
I hadn't thought of it that way before.
I kind of derive
this as also being...
I mean, this is her story. Her story.
Human beings kind of killing the earth, and eventually man will just kind of, like, by stabbing the tree and all that. Anyway.
Well, remember, he's reliving the story of the Mayan Adam right here, where
he is sacrificed
to and becomes the tree, essentially.
Well, because what he does is he takes the blood and he sees that it can grow life, and he thinks, oh, I think I'll fix myself. Yeah. Only, buddy, that ain't going to happen. In essentially, well, that's right, because it's the story that she was reading in the museum, where the tree of, I think, guess she said the tree of life grew out of him. No, I guess that's what does it. Note to self, if I ever find the tree of life, don't drink the sap.
The music is so epic right now.
Mm-hmm. I just love. I like how the storylines visually just flow from one into the other. Look, he's behind the stars are behind him there, but he's as the conquistador. And it's time for some puppetry. Wow.
Death brings new life.
Death is life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Can't get much more literal than that.
Yep.
And now he's part of the world tree.
And now he has the ring.
So here we had the conquistador's moment of enlightenment, and now we're to the Omega Man.
And there we have the star getting ready to die. Oh, and visually, that's just great that he puts it right, the ring right over the tattoo.
New beginning.
I like how he's just like a... Wow.
A new world tree universe is born.
Yeah.
And we do it all over again.
And it all comes back to the rain.
The next one will have Brad Pitt and Kate Blanchett in it.
Or goes back to this memory. Oh, yeah, that's right. That's from the whatever plant it was that helped save Donovan. And he plants it right at the grave.
In the snow. And yet it grows.
That's right. Making it somehow plausible that the space story may have just happened. Indeed, or will happen.
For his sake, I hope that doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. It'd just be nicer for his soul if he can get to this realization now rather than live thousands and thousands of years alone until he hits that realization.
And that's the movie.
Was it also symbolizing that the modern man can't accept, even though he did plant that there, he never really accepted that the death that
I think
the other two did?
I kind of took it that way. When I saw it the first time at the very end when he planted it, I'm like, holy crap. Wait a minute. Maybe that part of this, I mean, this is my reaction, but maybe the story did really happen, which, yes, it would be very sad, but I could see that, I mean, with that, how that could have all happened. Oh, the music's by Clint Mansell.
But to me, I think the planting of the seed is his accepting what's happening. It's him accepting what she told him, mm-hmm. that, you know, death brings new life. I think, to me, that symbolizes his acceptance of it. Mm. And to go back to the grave when he couldn't handle being there before, you know, he's finally being able to say goodbye to her.
He's enacting a ritual when he walked away from the ritual earlier. So,
right.
Sure,
yeah,
sure,
I think it all, you get different levels of understanding in each version, and you get the sort of physical understanding of the conquistador comes through, and then you have sort of a mid-range with him enacting the ritual and not maybe fully accepting everything, but being on the path towards
understand,
and then you see in the Omega Man, Cosmic Man, this full acceptance of things, just as the universe is ending.
Yeah,
he gets it together.
You kind of have to accept it at that point. whether you do or not.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, I saw that last thing as being kind of the twist. For me, when I saw it, it was a reaction. It was a twist. It was like, oh, okay, I can see how that part is. Because I think I'd heard part of the thing that the space story maybe was true, maybe it was not. It was confusing to people or whatever. I'm like, oh, whatever.
I think in this movie, you got to let it go.
But that's the thing. It doesn't have to be one way or another. That's simply how I saw it. And I thought that was intriguing to me. That's all. I was like, oh, it could be one. It could be the other. It doesn't necessarily have to be, but I thought it was very interesting that maybe it was, and maybe that was the case. And the way the story told itself, of course, you know, crossed over, and the true story was about their love and him coming to accept their death.
And accepting his own mortality
as well. Which is actually what someone else's death is all about.
Yeah, that's true.
You staying behind and accepting, because once they've passed on, we don't know what they experience, but we're left here and we have to deal with it because they've gone where we can't, and we know
at some point we're going to go there, and we know it's more real when you've experienced losing someone. You know that your own death is more real.
Right.
Again, it's a cycle. We see in the beginning that Adam's been, you know, kicked out of the garden and lost the understanding of being in the garden and trying to work his way back towards that understanding of no difference between himself and everything around him. So,
well, I look at it three different versions of acceptance. You know, how do you all of them are symbolism on how do you come to accept what life and death is, and truly the conquistador never really accepted it.
Had it thrust upon him.
Oh, yeah. Exactly.
Even at the end, when he realized it, he put it on the wound, and then he's like, was drinking it and he's stabbing. I'm like, you're stabbing the tree of life. What is your problem? But he didn't truly understand. And
he had no understanding.
Yeah.
And then at the end, he was pushed to accept it. He had to if he was going to move on and live. And if you can't accept it, then you die.
Well, I mean, the point is you die and it doesn't make a difference if you accept it or not.
Exactly.
Actually, the death overtook him very quickly. He's like, what's going on with me? I have no understanding. I'm just doing my queen's bidding. But he didn't have the... Once again, but that story was written by her and finished by him, basically, to help him understand what she was going through. So it's all big symbolic game.
Right. And, again, she gave him the mythology he needed to, that his science couldn't serve up the meaning that he needed. That made any sense. It sort of came out wrong, but
yeah.
You know, another symbol that I really like, I think that applies to this movie, is the Ouroboros, the universal snake that wraps around itself and bites its own tail.
Mm-hmm.
And you get a bit of that flow in this movie in the cycle. Mm. As the tree moves through the universe, the star explodes and then grows again, like the snake that keeps regenerating itself.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and that's also the focus on the ring throughout the whole film as well.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, circle of
again,
life.
Circle.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting how, you know, I mean, there's so many ways you can take this film, and it's kind of like, you know, it's like talking about this film is almost like talking about religion or politics. It's a never-ending cycle of arguments, and it's like until you come to accept it that these are the ways you can do it. Everything's right there in front of you, but how can you soak that in and regurgitate it?
Or accept it.
It's
interesting that you should say religion or politics, because I kind of come at the viewpoint that science, but also politics, has become our new religion, our mm-hmm. mythology, and that we put that kind of energy and focus into politics that used to come from our mythologies and our religion mm-hmm. and that sort of thing, and we're not getting the meaning out of it that we did from our mythology.
Actually, sure. I will trump you a little bit on that. I don't think it's necessarily politics. I think it's media, because media essentially takes a politics as a story. In other words, politics is just storytelling. I mean, the story of what our power is doing.
And politics is as old as myth.
Yeah, and it's about the story. And the thing with my point about media is that the way the media has changed in the past 15 years with the internet is that mm-hmm. how we receive our information has changed drastically from how, you know, it used to be gotten even just 10 years ago, more, but probably 15 years ago. We get most, a lot of people, we get our information, we get our news, and then with blogs or any opinions and that kind of thing, and you get a, just a vast, you get more input, a more of a democratization of stories coming out, and obviously politics, for the most part, provide a great source of like, oh, well, this story, that story, and messages and memes that get pushed out through this, as opposed to we used to just have, you know, we used to have whatever, three channels, three networks, maybe four networks, and then we got, you know, went to cable, we had radio. So now there's just so much way, there's, in other words, there's such a big pipe, you have to have so many more stories to fill the pipe with, kind of thing.
Right, but in terms of...
And that's where we get so many different kinds of stories.
But what the stories you're talking about are feeding into a belief system, whether you consider yourself a Republican or a Democrat, has become a lot more important to people today than, or for a lot of people, more important than any religious affiliation, in a lot of regards.
And I'd say it's because there are so many stories out there, and in a way, because there's so many stories, there's more, in a way, you could see a bit of more of a concentration of stuff of that happening. You have to attach yourself to one thing. I don't know. I'm just throwing an idea out there, but I like this because I've been toying with this idea. But so we're getting so much information. And so how is that changing what kind of stories we're clinging to, that kind of thing? I mean, even if you look at something like The Fountain, if The Fountain came out, I don't know, 20 years ago, would have been marketed a lot different because the market would have been a lot different. You had home video at the time, but there was nothing like the internet to get it out. There would have been a different kind of campaign and that kind of thing. And there may have been a more of a chance, or even 40 years ago, more of a chance of more people seeing it. It would have stayed in theaters longer, that kind of thing, as opposed to... Now, I'm just using it as an example.
But even 40 years ago, a film like this probably would not have been made.
Early 70s?
I don't know. Not in the U.S.
Yeah, not in the U.S.
If you want to say it's a European film, but I still think...
I guess you could end that argument by saying that is the argument that Buddhist and other creationists, you know, just fight against, which is you're feeding into the machine, so why even have the argument?
Right.
So just own it, accept it.
Exactly.
We're here to live or die.
Yeah. So, anyway, I like the film.
It's a good film.
I still like the film.
It's a great film.
Fantastic.
I've never watched it high, and I plan to.
Yeah, you didn't say that here, did you?
No. Okay. I don't get high.
We're not recording this, no. So.
I think it's a beautiful film, and I hadn't seen it in about a year or so, and I do feel like every time I watch it, I take away something a little bit different. It becomes a little bit... I don't know, more or less obtainable to me, but I'm more okay with that the more times I watch it.
Mm-hmm.
I like it more and more each time I see it, and I feel like I come to a better understanding of it each time I see it.
Curtis?
Deep water, sir, deep water.
Deep water, yeah, I'm with you on the deep water. It's, it reaches in there. Aronofsky really was, he did a good job.
I'm glad I've seen it for the second time, but it's so daunting, and it's like trying to wrap your mind around an enigma.
But you know what the thing is? It's a heavy film.
Sure.
So it's not the kind of thing, Friday night, I think I'll pop this in all the time.
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. So. You know, I think it probably could have used a few moments of humor there, here and there, in some way that would have maybe helped give it more of a balanced feeling about it, maybe not quite such a weight of a film, but I don't know.
Then you got to ask,
would it have worked?
Yeah, you know, exactly. I can see what you're saying, but I agree. I don't. I my feeling is that it. I couldn't see it. I me as a filmmaker. I couldn't see a single thing to change in this film. Mm-hmm. It is just from beginning to end. They had a plan. They discovered the plan. They discovered the sculpture. And
well executed.
It really just beautiful, beautiful. So, on that note, I think we're going to end this film grok. You can find us on the internet at www.filmgrok.com. You can find us on Facebook. Please friend us. Hey, and we're even on Twitter. I think we have 5 friends at this time. Maybe that'll go up. So, and I think someone's 2 of them. One person. So, on that note, this has been...
Michael Smith.
Curtis Nelson.
Heidi Hilliker.
And Serge Dalpierre. See you next time.